The Hannah Gray Mayor of Bromley podcast. Championing small businesses. Hannah Gray has been serving the community as a local government councillor for several years. She was nominated to be the 2020-2021 Mayor of the London Borough of Bromley at the height of the COVID pandemic in March 2020. Hannah has for many years been known as one of South London's most prolific small and medium enterprise networkers. Before becoming Mayor, Hannah was Bromley's business champion, promoting and helping entrepreneurs achieve their business ambitions. She's now dedicated to helping promote SMEs, charities, and voluntary organizations to learn from their experiences for the benefit of all.
Welcome to this podcast. And this one is a little unusual. It's our health and well-being joint podcasts, and I'm joined by four expert guests, one at a time. Slightly longer than normal, but it'll be well worth your time. We're being joined by Liam Price regarding Chinese medicine, then Donna Still, who's going to talk to us about shamanic energy healing and breath facilitating, then Neela Prabhu about homeopathic remedies, and finally Rosemary Farrow about hypnosis and Reiki. I do hope you find it really interesting. I am really delighted today to be joined by Liam Pace, who is a Chinese medicine practitioner and coach. Welcome, Liam. I know you wrote into the mayoral office a little while back now, because I often say on the end of my podcasts, if you are someone or know someone who'd like to come and join me, please let us know. So I'm so pleased you've written in.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I think we have a friend in common, do we not? We have Loretta from Life in Orpington.
We do indeed, yes. I'm a member of a networking group where I met Loretta, and we have shared interests. So she's a great person to talk all things video with.
Oh, yes, she is. She is indeed. And she's given me a few tips, although I've still got quite a lot to learn. But anyway, this is not about me. This is about you. And I'm really excited because I don't know anything about Chinese medicine. So that probably puts me in quite a good position to ask all the slightly daft questions that people might want to ask you. So what's the basis? Is it holistic, or what's the basis of Chinese medicine, and how can it help me?
Chinese medicine is a physiological system that is used to look at how the body works and to address signs and symptoms of dis-ease, as it's known in Chinese medicine. So it's a holistic system. It takes everything into account. So you could come with a headache and a cough, and you know, a sore shoulder, and I might be able to put that together into a pattern of disharmony that is affecting you. So it's unlike when you go to a GP's office where they have a more reductionist strategy, which is to bring everything down into one diagnosis. Actually, in Chinese medicine, more than one thing can be happening at once, and the system is flexible enough to allow you to treat more than one thing at once. So it's a complete system that is really effective for lots of different conditions.
Wow, that's interesting. And so where do you practice, and can people come and see you at the moment, or do we still have to wait for further lockdown lifts to happen?
No, absolutely. I'm available at Beckenham Therapy Rooms at the moment on a Monday. I do a half day there, and as I'm registered with the British Acupuncture Council, which is the largest regulatory body in the UK, we're classified as frontline workers. So I've been vaccinated, and our code of safe practice is very thorough. So you'll see me in mask and overalls and all sorts. Most acupuncturists registered with the British Acupuncture Council will still be working.
That's also really good to know. Difficult to say, British acupuncturists.
I'll say BAC, that might be a bit easier.
But that's really good to know. So would you encourage people to come to you with with almost any condition. I mean, we've got people with lots of anxiety at the moment, and that could be showing itself in many ways. I'm not an expert in this, but, you know, surrounded by friends and family that show their anxiety in many ways, I would imagine you could use your medicine to help them feel better about themselves. So what kind of thing would happen?
Well, stress is a key area for me. It's how I got into Chinese medicine many years ago. It's such a fantastic, relaxing treatment that you can give to people, that for any sort of emotional disturbance, stress, anxiety, depression, however it manifests, because everyone is different, there's a lot that you can do to get people back on the road to having better mental health, especially in these difficult times. A lot of the clients that I see at the moment, if they may not necessarily be coming for stress, but very often that is one of the root causes of what they're going through. So I will be treating that. But it is so flexible. You can literally treat anything. A lot of conditions, when they're more chronic, it's more about management. So when you're talking about chronic pain, for example, it's about working over a period of time to reduce that pain and get the person back to a state where they're able to be more,
maybe calmer and more productive in themselves.
They're getting back to more how their more active lifestyle rather than and being free of pain.
That is so debilitating, isn't it? Pain is so debilitating. So tell me, so you've talked about acupuncture, but are there lotions and potions, for want of a better word, and I'm not being disrespectful, but are there things that people take, and are they herbal or
absolutely
what is it that you prescribe?
Chinese medicine is the system, is how you look at the body, and then you have techniques that you can use within the system. So acupuncture is the most well known, but I also practice Tuinar massage, which is specialist Chinese medicine massage, which has a very focused way of working with the body. You can also get herbal remedies, not something that I practice myself at the moment. It's a 2-year qualification, 2-year master's in the UK, and having young children, it's difficult to commit the time to studying that. But there's also what's called Yang Shen. Yang Shen is roughly translated as nourishing life. So that's the lifestyle aspect of how you can live a preventative lifestyle so that these problems don't ever occur, let alone the tweaks that you can make when things aren't working. And then, of course, there's the nutritional aspect as well. So there's many facets to Chinese medicine. I think people are most aware of acupuncture, but actually there's lots of other things that you can do if you're worried about needles, for example.
So why would people think of Chinese medicine? I know we're talking about it now, and I hope it's opening people's eyes, because some people can be quite scared of something they don't understand. They might they might stick with traditional medicine. I have been told off on a number of times because I was calling many of the therapies I took as alternative medicine, and they were saying, no, it's not alternative medicine. It is complementary. So it comes alongside normal traditional, for want of a better word, medicines. So why would people think, you know what, I'm going to go and try Chinese medicine? Is it because they're fed up with the amount of paracetamol they're taking, or their penicillin, or all those other drugs? Why would they think Chinese medicine?
Well, there's many reasons that I can think of. First and foremost is that it excels at preventative care. So it's teaching you a way of living your life where you are less likely to get sick. There are the practitioners of ancient China, they wouldn't get paid if their client was sick, because it meant that they weren't doing their job properly. Now, obviously, in our modern society, it's a difficult way of working, but the principles are the same. Is we're there to keep you healthy so that you don't have any of the everyday issues that come up. I think on top of that is the fact that it's much better to come to a Chinese medicine practitioner before the last port of call. Very often we're seeing people who they're coming to us because they've seen everyone else and no one can help them. The earlier you come to a Chinese medicine practitioner with an issue, the higher the chances there are of getting you out of that situation, whether that be stress, whether that be pain, perhaps you have to go down the road of having fertility treatment. In all these instances, Chinese medicine is always the afterthought, not the forethought. So what I'm trying to do is raise awareness of the fact that come see me first or one of my colleagues first, and actually there's a higher chance that we can help you sooner than if you go through the more regular path of GP, yes, referral, specialist, physio, whatever it is.
I understand. That's really useful to know, and something that I wouldn't have thought of had I have not had this opportunity to chat with you. So I hope other people that are going to listen to this podcast and see this podcast will think of you as a possibility before having to go and have the drugs that maybe aren't necessary if they come to see you first. I'm not saying that none of them are necessary, but but sometimes, especially if it's preventative, I think that's extremely good. You were saying just before we came on air that you also have a YouTube project going on. What is that?
That is my way of spreading the word. There's been a bit of a stigma over the years around Chinese medicine about what it is that we get up to. You know, there's certain taboo subjects like the use of animal products, for example, and people have questions because it's relatively new experience, but it's an ancient art that's come out of the East. So I try and answer questions that come up quite often, and also give some how-to videos so people can treat themselves for more acute things at home.
Excellent. Well, what I'd love to do, Liam, is I'd love to include that link on this podcast. So if you send me that and a lovely picture of yourself, we will make sure that that's all included in the podcast. I really do appreciate it. Sorry it's such a short interview,
but
I really hope people will go onto your YouTube, find out more about it, and we should all open our eyes a little bit more, which is what this whole selection of well-being interviews are about today, is let's all open our eyes because there's a lot out there that can help us.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Liam.
Pleasure.
Really lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
Hi, Donna. I am so pleased you're with me. So this is Donna Still, a shamanic breath facilitator. And some people may not know what that means, Donna. So I'm really hoping you'll be able to explain it to us, because I know that you feel passionately about this and that you feel it can really help people. So if you'd like to start off by explaining what shamanic breath facilitator actually means, that would be great.
Brilliant. Thank you. So shamanic breath facilitator means that I work with two things, breath and energy. And I work with what shows up in the moment. So when I'm working with clients from, I teach them a very specific breath technique, a protocol for breathing, which changes the carbon dioxide and oxygen levels in the brain.
And
that then creates a different effect in the body. I also use acupressure and sound healing and work with the energies that show up during this, having the client do the breath protocol.
So
there's a lot going on.
If I came to you, sorry to interrupt, if I came to you really anxious and stressed, you'd be able to help me with my breath. Because as an ex-singer, I used to do lots of really deep breathing. But I'm sure it's far more than that, isn't it? Because you said it's getting the right oxygen into the brain and the acupuncture as well. So if I came to you, acupressure, I'm so sorry. So if I came in and would you get me breathing deeply, and or is there a sort of any humming or any breath on your hands? How does it work? How does it work, Donna? I'm so sorry, but I really don't know, and I should come to you and find out.
So how it works is, first of all, I get the client to tune into their own breath, because often we don't really take a lot of notice on how we're breathing. And every person's breathing pattern is as unique as their thumbprint. So because that's completely unique, it means that each person's breathing pattern is determined by all your life experiences to date.
Right.
So someone who is anxious, I find that their breath is very much in the shoulders and the upper chest.
A bit shallow.
Yeah. Very shallow. Yeah. So the way to work with them would be to encourage them to breathe more deeply. Mm. But the challenge is like working with what causes them to be shallow breathing and feeling like they're not worthy enough to take in enough air to bring it all the way down to the seat of consciousness that's in their belly.
Okay.
So this is where all the, you know, sort of knowing how all the meridians work and how the energy works around the body, and each part of the body relates to a different, so we've got the masculine and the feminine, we've got our creativity, you know, there are so many different energy systems that what we've done is combined it all into this way of being able to work with clients so that they can release trauma from the past or release anxieties that are causing them or thoughts that are causing them anxiety now. Because anxiety generally, I mean, this is a real generalization, but anxiety generally is caused by someone being in their heads, constantly overthinking about something that hasn't yet happened. Depression, on the other hand, is someone constantly in their heads thinking about things that have happened that they've got no control over anymore.
Right.
So it's working to be able to help them to be able to let go of all the thoughts, become really conscious in their body, allow the body to heal itself. Because when we get the conscious mind out of the way, you know, we can relax. So, and there's this whole stream of experiences that we have because we're uptight, tense, and like constantly. And once we start to just calm down the body, and it calms down the nervous system, because when we're up tense like that, we're constantly in the fight or flight mode. I mean, there's a huge body of science, and I don't have the brain to keep constantly remember all these facts and figures, but there's a huge body of science that shows how the breath works with the parasympathetic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, with the vagus nerve. There's so many different ways of breathing. I mean, it's not new. I mean, obviously, since man was... we've always been breathing. So, you know, it's our most potent medicine.
And the brain is so clever, isn't it? And it's, I mean, it's, a friend of mine says 2.5 pounds in your head is the most amazing, clever system that controls the whole body. But of course, the breath is so important. And you're right, you know, so many times if you're worried about something or anxious about something or thinking about something, you can feel it in different parts of your body. It's not always in the same place, is it? It's not always. Sometimes it's in your shoulders. Sometimes you find that you might have been sleeping with your fists clenched, because you don't, you know, something's going on that you're not aware of. So that breath to release it all and connect it all, it sounds, I'm sure it's very different, but it sounds a little bit like meditation in a way of the different areas of the body, because I've only ever done that once or twice with another lovely lady whom you know. And I just felt the connection. So I'd imagine with the breath that you use, is our breath, obviously, that you'll find that connections with other parts of your body to be able to release your feelings. And it's amazing how the body can heal itself, isn't it? With some help with someone like you, where you focus on what you need to work on. It's amazing how it can heal itself. So would you say that coming to yourself as a complementary therapist would be something you do before you ran off to the doctor and got some tablets? I mean, is it something that if someone's got a splitting headache or they've got real pains in their shoulders or maybe crunched up stomach or maybe even, you know, IBS, you know, because that's caused by anxiety often, not necessarily just a chemical reaction. Do you think you could help people with all of those?
I can. With anxiety and going, you know, that if we can calm down and slow down, because often it's like we're going too fast. And because we've become that culturally reliant on taking pills and looking outside of ourselves, often we already know what we need to do, but we don't do it. So there's a big disconnect. And, you know, most people know that the going to the doctors for the pills are not the right answer. And they know intrinsically that keep talking about an event doesn't necessarily help either, because it just embeds it deeper and deeper. So we've lost touch as a culturally with healthy ways of releasing pent up emotions. And we have learned from a very young age to repress like anger, shame, guilt, fear. And I'm not saying we should all go out emoting all over the place inappropriately. That's not what I mean. But, you know, there are healthy ways to release those emotions and not make them bad, because we're not intrinsically bad.
Mm.
And we have all those experiences. So I have worked with clients who have been seeing counsellors, and sometimes during breathwork, client, stuff comes up basically for release. And what we do is we release through the experience, and it's not to negate it. We release through the experience to integrate what we need to learn from that experience, so that we can then use it as a springboard to be able to move forward, rather than trying to say, pretend that it didn't happen. Or, you know, I have worked with rape victims. I've worked with people that have had really like serious trauma, and they initially like couldn't like get their heads around the idea of working in this way. But actually, you know, one client had 21 years of counseling for a particular challenge. And after just a two breathwork workshops, they said that they had been able, well, they've already told me what has happened in their life since then, and how much they've grown in terms of what they're offering in their own business. And they hadn't realized how much that event that happened when they were younger was impacting them still until that point, because it came up during the breath workshop. Because where I work on the different levels, so I'm working with what's showing up, I'm also working energetically. So there was an incident, you know, during this particular workshop, there was a thing that happened, and I reflected that back to the client, which then created this whole cathartic release.
Yeah.
And once that release happened, then that was when they said, you know, like a few days later, that how they'd felt like it had just all been lifted.
Yeah.
And they've been carrying that guilt and anger from that event for over 21 years.
That's incredible. That is really incredible. Mm. And I know people that have come to you, and I know people that have been very, very pleased with the work they've been able to do with you, which is a great reason for inviting you to come on this podcast. And I hope that other people will now feel confident, because it can be scary to approach something that the people don't understand. But there are such fantastic alternatives in this well-being, which is why I wanted to do this podcast with a variety of different people. So thank you for joining me today, Donna. I really hope people will feel brave and confident and come and see you, because I know that you've done great work. And please give me all your details. We'll put it on the podcast and a contact details so people can get hold of you. So thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, and not as scary as I thought.
Not at all. Well done.
Thank you.
So my next guest on my well-being group is Neela Prabhu. I'm so pleased you can join me, Neela. You're a homeopath. and you've been a community pharmacist for 20 years. And I believe you wrote into the office as well as Liam to ask whether you could be on the podcast, which is great, because I do say, if you know someone or are someone that wants to come on the podcast, and I'm so pleased, I've got a lovely group of people that I'm putting together in a well-being group. Please tell me, how did you get into homeopathy.
That's all right. it can be a bit of a mouthful. I was a community pharmacist for about 20 years, and it took me a long time to realise, but I wasn't actually happy. I was, coming home, I was feeling very stressed. I turned to chocolate, alcohol, burst into tears. And it took me a while to kind of go, this isn't just a bad week or a bad month. This is a bad career. Something needs to change. So I thought, okay, now what? And I am to this day, as I was then, a homeopathic patient. Myself and my two daughters have been treated homeopathically for the last 11, 12 years. And my homeopath said, oh, you could be a homeopath. And I was like, I'm not sure. I sped through the course. It was a 1-year online course, which was fab. I'm a bit of a geek. I love studying and obviously even still studying now. And so next month it'll be 2 years I've been qualified. So, yeah.
It's interesting because I don't think many people really understand, including me, what homeopathy is all about. I've got told off in the past for calling some people in the wellbeing circle alternative medicine. And I know it isn't. It's a complementary medicine. So I've been educated. But how does it work? I mean, if someone who is really anxious, really, really down, maybe even at this time has got mental health issues because of everything that we've been through this year, can they turn to homeopathy before they go to the doctor? I'm not saying we shouldn't ever go to doctors, but before we go there, do you think homeopathy is something that could really help someone with mental health and issues like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're quite right that it is complementary. It comes under the bracket of complementary and alternative medicine. If someone's been run over by a bus, yeah, absolutely. Let's call 999 and, off you go to the hospital. I'm not knocking the NHS at all. No. I was an employee for 20 years. I think the NHS is brilliant at doing emergencies. It's not as good at doing maintenance. And I think they have limited tools in their toolbox. And when you get to the end of the toolbox, they kind of, we're not sure, so someone might be pain-free of back pain, but they're asleep all day and they're like, this is not really acceptable to my life kind of thing. But coming back to the anxiety, I have been asked this quite a lot, obviously with current situation. And yes, homeopathy can help, but homeopathy is individualized. So I can't say, oh, well, this is the product or remedy that you need to go and buy, because it is, per person. Even identical twins have different gut biomes. So the three things I would say for people, which are not really homeopathy related, but I would advise them to any of my patients, is journaling is really good for anxiety. The back flower remedy, rescue remedy, I know a lot of people have heard of that. I'm a level 2 practitioner for that. So I actually have the whole set and they are really good to help with my practice because they deal with emotional issues only. And the last thing I would say is EFT or emotional freedom technique, which is tapping. So you're sort of tapping on the relevant acupressure points and you say an affirmation. There's lots of different ways of doing it, but it really, really works. You will feel like a prat doing it, so don't worry about that. But it has got, some people out of some really deep holes, and there are some practitioners who only use that technique. It's really powerful, to be honest. Yes, so
I've seen that used for people with fear of flying. And it really has got them on a plane when they would never get on a plane.
Yeah.
But if you were to give us some examples of the kind of people that you would normally help, I mean, if there is a normally help, I mean, when would people come to you? What sort of symptoms would they have? And they think, I'm going to go to my homeopath and see if they can help me with this. What sort of people would come?
Yeah, I mean, they do fall into two distinct groups. There's the group of people who've used, complementary medicines before, be it Reiki, acupuncture, homeopathy, whatever it is, or they've been recommended to me. The other group of people, I'm kind of like the last chance saloon. They've tried everything else and I think, hey, whatever, what else have I got to lose? And to be honest, I actually enjoy that challenge more, because when I kind of, you know, help them, I'm like, yes, I've got one, you know, I've got one in, I've helped that person. Because that's what it's about, is helping that person improve their quality of life. So I can treat anybody and any, you know, anybody for anything, but the more common things that people come to me at the moment for are things like eczema, anxiety, and also recurrent urinary tract problems. So recurrent cystitis, basically. I had a lady who was suffering for 18 months, every month with her period. So thank you, Mother Nature, for that. Bless her. She was really at the end of her tether. She came to see me in July last year, and she hasn't suffered since. So she is, needless to say, over the moon, not needing to take antibiotics or having the pain or anything like that. So it's really satisfying.
So there's many things that you can help with, and I'm sure she is delighted if anybody's ever suffered from that. Yes, we don't need to give any more away, do we? But yeah, that's really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah, so it is fantastic.
So have you... you said that your children have been using homeopathic methods for some while, and you did. Would you like to share why and how that came about? Because I know that there is a backstory behind that, but it's not really for me to lay it out. It's for you to tell us if you'd like to.
Yeah, sure. So my eldest, who's 12 now, when she was 14 months old, she started suffering with eczema in the crook of her elbows. You know, sort of classic place to have eczema. It was red, itchy, obviously very uncomfortable. And I was using a very mild steroid cream, hydrocortisone 0.5%. So even less than what you can buy over the counter. But it wasn't working and it was bleaching her skin. And for those who are listening on the podcast, my skin is of Asian heritage, and so is my daughter's. I wasn't really happy about the bleaching, because I know that it can be permanent. So I then started searching for an alternative. I found my homeopath, who's still my homeopath today, and is obviously a very good friend. She sorted it out. It has not returned. It's gone. So, So that's how I got into it. I bought a little mother and baby kit of remedies, which I still use, because people say, oh, well, why do you have a homeopath? You're qualified. I said, well, yes, but, you know, I go into mummy brain when I've, you know, if one of my children's, you know, for like, you know, minor things, I can deal with it. But if the major things, maintenance, you know, I just go into mummy brain and I panic, and you can't be objective about your own children, you know. So that's why I have a homeopath, because when she sort of says, oh, it's this remedy, or this is what we're going to do, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So she's a bit of a guru to you as well, then, I can imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what kind of, are these sort of lotions, potions, powders? What would people get from you? I don't mean to say that in a disrespectful way, but people don't know what to expect.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. 98% of people don't know what homeopathy is, or, you know, even what it can do. So normally I administer, because homeopathy is an energy medicine, so we're not giving things in a physical manner. So it doesn't actually matter how we give it to you. But the most common way is they're tiny little sugar pills, a bit like sweetener tablets, that kind of size. Yeah. Obviously very palatable, because they are made of sugar. You can get sugar-free versions if people are concerned. You can also make homeopathic remedies as a liquid remedy, or you can just dissolve one of the pills in a bit of water. And obviously you can then, if it's, you know, a newborn baby or that sort of thing. That's generally how they come. So,
okay. That's lovely. And there were a couple of other bits that we did talk about before coming onto the podcast. I don't know if you'd like to touch on them, but one of the things you do, you had a bit of postnatal depression, didn't you, with your mental health issue. But before that, you had IVF for your fertility treatment. So you had your fertility treatment, then you had your child beautifully, and then you had postnatal depression. Now, that's a big subject covering both of those. But were there some things that we talked about that you'd like to cover? Is there something that you would like to share on those experiences?
Yeah, I mean, so both my children are IVF babies, and I'm incredibly lucky to have two health girls. You know, some people don't have that, and I'm I'm always, I'm quite open about speaking about my fertility journey, and also the postnatal depression I had. I had it after both, but after the second child was a lot worse and for a lot longer, because I still think that there are taboos surrounding it. People are still trying to put a brave face on, or people are asking quite intrusive questions when, you know, perhaps they shouldn't. So I know the first time round, you know, when I had my first child, people were asking, oh, you're married, you're not going to have a child, oh, you know, and all these questions. And I smiled and kept that pain inside. But the second time round, I didn't keep it inside, let's just say. So if someone did ask me the question of, oh, don't you want another child, I would have two stock responses. My mother was horrified at both of these responses. But anyway, the first one was, I said, well, shall I phone you next time I'm having sex with your husband? Sorry, with your husband. Oh, God, with my husband. Oh, my God, that sounds terrible. Bleep that. Yeah, with my husband, because that's basically what they're asking me. It's, you know, and the second one was, yes, I do want to have another child. Would you like to contribute to the IVF fund? And their faces would drop. And I know that they're quite strong responses. But actually, I feel that, you know, if you're asking those types of personal questions, and they were asked by not close friends of mine. They weren't, you know, people that I knew well. They were, you know, customers in the pharmacy, or, you know, other people that I knew through other things that were more acquaintances. And I thought, actually, I'm just going to push this back to you, because
yeah,
you're not always going to get, you know, a kind of all happy, all,
it's,
you know,
quite presumptuous.
From it.
It's quite presumptuous, isn't it?
Yeah.
For people to say, oh, you're going to have a baby there. Now you've got married. I mean, you were saying earlier, it has quite a lot to do with your culture as well, that, you know, it's presumed and that's what you do. I don't think it's just in your culture. I think people do it to, I mean, I had the same question. Oh, you have a baby now then? So, well, actually, I might not want to have a baby. I mean, I did, and I was very lucky. I've got two strapping lads, but it's difficult. People should be a little more careful, I think, and subtle. I'm sure they didn't ask you knowing in any way that it was going to cause you any pain. But sometimes people say these things, don't they?
Yeah. And I do, you know, it's not that they were being vindictive, but I think by me responding in that way, at least it lets them know that actually getting pregnant, especially nowadays, is not as easy as falling off a log. You know, there are huge issues for fertility for men and women. You know, it's not just up to the woman. You know, quite often it's put that, you know, there's lots of poking and prodding of women, not that much poking and prodding of men, but actually it's 50-50. So you know, so it's just difficult. It's something I feel quite open and passionate about speaking about, you know, so that people...
So if somebody was suffering, taking you back to homeopathy again, if somebody was suffering because they were mentally unhappy because they wanted to have a baby and they couldn't have a baby, I mean, would it be worth them coming and seeing you for some homeopathic medicine before they had to have any IVF and see if they can get themselves into the right place, both mentally and physically, if they do need to go down the IVF route?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, there is... You know, with homeopathy, the worst thing that can happen is nothing. There is no side effects. There is no harm. You know, it can be used by newborn babies, animals and plants, you know. So if there is something, and I don't just advise on homeopathy, I advise on nutrition, supplements. You know, if I feel there's a podcast or a book recommendation, I'll email that to my clients, you know, because I feel that actually this is helpful. You need this. You know, there's someone else who knows more about this. So yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, if they are undergoing treatment, as I was, you can use homeopathy alongside conventional medicine absolutely safely. There's no interactions at all with that.
And that's so, really good to know on all levels, not just on fertility, but on any medication. That's really good to know that people can use both at the same time and there's no side effects for doing so. Yeah. Oh, it's been really interesting. I could talk to you forever. I mean, the same with my other guests, but I'm going to have to call it quits here. Sure. Nina, thank you so much for your honesty, your openness, sharing your own life journey. Please send me all your details. I'll put them on the bottom of the podcast so that people can get hold of you should they want to come along and have a consultation. Whereabouts is it that you practice, if you'd like to just tell us?
So I'm very close to West Wickham. I'm kind of in Shirley, sort of West Wickham kind of end, but obviously with the power of Zoom, I can see people online. So
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you being here, and I'm sure people are going to find it really useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Thanks.
Well, I am delighted that Rosemary, you've joined me. Rosemary Farrow, hypnosis and Reiki are some of the things that we're going to be talking about today, part of my complete podcast on well-being. But first of all, I'd like you to tell me, what kind of hypnosis do you do, Rosemary? And welcome, of course.
Hi. No, it's lovely to be here, Hannah. I do really remedial hypnosis, and this type of hypnosis I particularly like because there's no trance work altogether. And I think sometimes people can be very wary of trance work, and this does not involve trance work. So people are always completely present. But its value is that we can communicate directly with the subconscious mind. Now you say, well, why would we need to do that? What's that got to do with well-being or anything? Well, one of the things that really causes issues with our well-being is our behaviour. You know, where's the hand? What happens to the hand that just goes in the cupboard and takes all the biscuits and we don't know what's happening, or that picks up the bottle of wine? That wasn't me. That was my hand that did that. Well, it wasn't your hand. It was your subconscious mind behaving in a certain way.
I don't mean to interrupt you, Rosemary, but that's really interesting because a very dear friend of mine has had hypnosis, and I actually don't know whether it's with you. And so I won't give any names away because that would be ridiculous at this stage. But to curb their eating and curb their drinking. So you've just mentioned that. And I was talking to this person the other day and thinking, yes, I can imagine that is, although hypnosis is something that frightens the heebie-jeebies out of me. And I think it's because I wouldn't be present. It was the not being aware of what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're giving over control. And I think we are talking about the same person, actually.
Right. And apparently that you were saying just a minute ago, you're not in that trance. You're absolutely present. So that is a different kind of hypnosis, and how fascinating and how helpful that can be for people. And can that help with anxiety as well? I know people do eat through anxiety, drink through anxiety, argue, shout, scream, do all sorts of things, but can that just generally help? Because with the way people are feeling now, after what we've all been through over the last year or so, can that help people?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this particular form of hypnosis, which is called control system, was actually put together by somebody who used to have chronic anxiety.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, it's understanding that actually anxiety is a part of you which is trying to tell you that something is important. Now, imagine if you've got a little bit of you saying this is important and maybe you don't want to hear, so you ignore it. What happens? You would shout louder. And then sometimes what happens with anxiety is you're looking at it and you go, oh my God, I'm anxious about something. And then another bit of you goes, oh my goodness, I must be anxious because I'm being anxious. And it becomes in this kind of maelstrom and spinning. So when we work with control, we actually say, this is a useful part. Actually, being aware of what is important is useful, but we don't need to shout about it.
Right.
It's quite a different approach to say you never want to get rid of anxiety because it's actually, in essence, performing a useful task for you. It's just it doesn't need to be so loud. And actually, maybe it's based on some other fears that if we can deal with those fears, it may not even need to shout and gather you by the, you know, the coat.
Yeah.
And shake you and say, you must do that. And of course, all those things that the visceral, the body experiences that we get with anxiety, like the tummies, the kind of the feeling sick, the nausea, all of that, that's your subconscious mind creating those effects to make you listen. Are you not listening to us? Because they think we need to listen.
Yeah.
Once you start seeing that this is your subconscious mind trying to help you, you just go, okay, that's great. But actually now, I'd like you to take me to a different place where I don't have those feelings engendered when I'm doing this, because it's nothing to be concerned or worried about anymore.
That is so interesting. I mean, the brain is a remarkable.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, another dear friend of mine, I've already mentioned her once in this podcast, but yeah. She says about this £2.5 worth of, you know, she does cognitive behavioral therapy and she's just incredible, and she's going to come on another time. But it's remarkable what the brain can do and how we can learn to control it a little as well, can't we? I wonder whether you just tell me, I know it's a jump, but it's important that we learn about it too, about the Reiki and how that works and how that could help people going forward and to improve and thrive and, you know, make the best of themselves.
Yeah, Reiki is something I've been doing for, I suppose, about 23 years now, which is, yeah, and I in fact was involved in setting the national occupational standards for Reiki with the governing, what became the governing body for Reiki. So yeah, that's a lot of involvement. Did you not? I'm still on that, and we're still creating more stuff to increase professionalism, make sure that people have minimal standards, can be regulated, etc., etc. So I don't think anybody really knows exactly how it works, and I would be lying if I said they did. However, there is a body of evidence for Reiki, particularly with regard to anxiety. And sleep and burnout.
So what is Reiki? Oh, sorry, I got a bit of feedback on there. So what is Reiki? What happens if someone comes to you and you say, right, I think Reiki is the way to go to help you. What would they expect? Because some people don't know what it is at all. What would they expect?
Yeah. So if somebody came and said, I'd like to try Reiki because maybe a friend said, oh, that really helped me, why don't you try it? And they go, well, what happens? I'd say, well, mostly you can lie down on a couch just as you would for a massage. You could even sit in a chair. And generally, either I'm going to place my hands either on you or just above you, whichever you prefer. And what people experience is a feeling of generally of calm and of peace. If they're exhausted, then they may also find that they actually begin to be full of energy. And one way one of the founders put it is, imagine that we're a little bit like a stream, and that stream can get a bit clogged up. You know, so almost if you imagine like the stream is also like the mind, I have to say that. And there's a bit of sediment and rubbish, whatever, going along. And a lot of this, again, is the kind of stuff that we've got in the back of our mind, the mental baggage that we bring with us that we don't need anymore. And Reiki comes in almost like clear water. So just imagine that you're pouring clear water in this stream. And the more water that you pour in the stream, the more Reiki you pour, the clearer the stream goes.
So the rubbish is gone. And you feel purer and more full of energy and clearer in your thoughts. It's fascinating. And I suppose it's ancient. Should I presume it's ancient, or is it?
No, funny enough, the guy who, people like to say this, but the guy who founded it, I could say discovered it in the early 20th century.
Oh, gosh. I would have thought it was more ancient than that. It just seems so fundamental that you'd think it was sort of ancient practice. But I suppose because it's such a natural, from what you're saying, so it's sort of an aura. So if your hands aren't actually touching me, there must be some sort of aura or heat or power coming out of two bodies that are close together. So if your hands are above me and not on me, that is making my body relax and purifying that river, as you were talking about. There must be something like that happening.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Reiki from, you know, my perspective and having done it for 23 years is that it's almost a response to the need of the recipient. So you can't make somebody draw Reiki from you. I also like to see Reiki from an electrical point of view. For instance, you know, if you've got a mobile phone, and if you let your phone completely run down, so there's no battery left, it doesn't work. And what Reiki does, if you like, you're plugging the charger in.
Right.
So you've got this, like, almost infinite amount source of energy. And myself, I'm connecting you. I'm the charger that connects the plug with the mobile phone, and I'm charging you up. But it's only going to charge if you want, if you need, want to allow the energy to come into you. So if you actually say, well, actually, I don't want to be charged up, nothing will happen. So that's another thing. It's also, I suppose, like hypnosis, a lot of the kind of hypnosis I do, you're in charge of it. You're utterly in charge of it. The interesting thing is, I could go into science. The interesting thing is you can also have a sense where the body is flowing and working, where it isn't flowing and working with Reiki.
Right.
And if I was going to science, I would say that there is science there that shows where the body is stressed, it actually throws off biophotons, little bits of light. And the more stressed a body is, the more it throws off these little biophotons. And somehow, and I've no idea why, and I've no idea how, but you can actually pick that up, which means you can also spend time on the bits that really need you. Just as in a massage, you would spend time on the parts of the body that are an issue. So in Reiki, you can spend time on the parts of the body that are most stressed or out of energy, if you will, that have been used so much or injured.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. So would you use a combination of hypnosis and Reiki for someone, or would someone come to you specifically for a treatment? Or maybe they'd come to you with I'm feeling this way, or I've got aches in my shoulders, or I've got pains in my stomach, or I've got pains in my chest, or I've got the raving headaches, whatever it might be. Would they come to you with a symptom, or would they come to you specifically for a treatment, or is it maybe a combination of the two? Do you advise?
Sometimes people may come for one thing, and I say, I know you've come for this, but actually that's not what you need, and this is what I have to advise you I think would be in your best interest to have. I know quite a few people who do use hypnosis and Reiki, or trained in both, because they do actually go very, very well together. But they're normally kept separate, but they do complement in many, many ways. Yeah,
from the way you've described it, I felt that they might do. I mean, I know nothing, but I just felt that they might well do. So it's a whole person that can come to you. Mm. I mean, I was talking earlier, and will be in the complete podcast, as I said, about the difference between complementary therapy and alternative therapy. And I have been told off for calling it alternative therapy. But I think I've got more of the hang of the fact that most of this well-being stuff we've been talking about today is complementary. Mm-hmm. I mean, people can get all of these things before they have to go and take tablets. They can do it as preventative rather than just, you know, taking a tablet. Or, of course, I know there are occasions, of course, where you go to the doctor and you need that kind of medical intervention. Of course you do. I'm not suggesting that that's not the case, and the NHS are amazing. But you could use your therapies as preventative and proactive, couldn't you, as well as
if you think that the really big buzzword now is lifestyle medicine, and that effectively means that if you change your behavior, you change your health. And what you're doing with hypnosis generally is changing your behavior. So all the things that might long term take you down the path to needing to a chronic issue, you could possibly avoid, or just step a little bit back on that path.
Yes, interesting. And you said earlier, before we came on air, that you're working with the NHS as well. So what is it you're doing with the NHS?
Okay, so during lockdown, we were seeing on Facebook forums, people, well, particularly nurses, they might have had Reiki, and they were going into COVID wards, and they were saying, oh, please send me Reiki, I'm just crying because I'm so nervous about it. And then we had a whole load of, you know, Reiki practitioners who weren't seeing their clients anymore because of lockdown and doing nothing. And it really occurred to me that, well, why not bring the two together? Because we can do Reiki in a distance way. Again, I don't know how it works. Nobody knows how it works, but it seems to work. And so what we've done is we've got currently over 250 Reiki practitioners, and NHS medical professionals can sign up at www.reikimedicare.org. We will send them Reiki by distance for a period of like 4 days in a row, and they can have more of it. Now, because we're interested in research, we also get them to fill in well-being scores on stress, anxiety, pain, sleep, and overall well-being. It's an NHS standard or accepted measure called MIMOP. And recently, we've had it analysed by our researchers in the US that we partnered with. And we've got some amazing figures which are being presented at a conference on integrative medicine in about a week's time, actually. So that is really, and we have got medium to very strongly significant results for stress, anxiety, well-being, and I think pain for those medical professionals who have been through it. And we've got some really positive, you know, feedback from them. They're so grateful that the service is here. And also because we have groups of people sending at once, so it's more than one people, and we can condense the treatment into 20 minutes and they can say when they want it.
That's great. That is so great. And to know that that's there for our NHS staff that we admire hugely on the front line and the work they've been putting in for us. That's fabulous, Rosemary. I would love to stay chatting for ages, but as I said, I'm going to put this all together. So I've got four of you in one podcast. So unfortunately, I will have to call it quits there, but maybe we could do another one another day and we talk about it in a little bit more depth. And it really is fascinating. I just have had my mind changed and I'm fairly open-minded, but I've had my mind changed by all four of you today. So thank you so much for spending the time and coming to talk to us. Please give us all your details. We'll put them on the bottom of the Facebook post and then, of course, the podcast post. But thank you so much, Rosemary.
Thank you so much, Hannah.
Thank you for joining me today. If you know someone or are someone who should join me, please get in touch. Meanwhile, believe in yourself, support others, and please stay safe.